I'm Erin.
And I'm McKenna.
And together we're the Daily Profcast.
We're two long-distance besties
who share a love of Harry Potter.
We hope you enjoyed the episode.
Today we're going to be talking about the Sorcerer's Stone film and comparing it to our recently concluded reread of the book. McKenna, opening thoughts about rewatching Sorcerer's Stone. Sorcerer's Stone is not a movie I return to often.
No, when I want to sit down and watch a Harry Potter, I usually want to watch 4 through 7.2.
Yeah, same.
Because as endearing as Sorcerer's Stone is, it is a movie about children.
It was also nice to revisit it now that we have the perspective of just having read the book. It was really cool to finish the book and immediately go to the film.
We watched the extended version together.
So worth it.
Which was amazing. It was definitely longer. We had a comedy of errors trying to figure out how to watch a movie that I owned on iTunes.
Yeah, when we live across the country from each other.
Right, it only took us an hour and a half, I believe, to figure it out. But it was worth it. I've owned these movies for years on iTunes. I bought them probably 2 years ago. I was really sick in bed and I wanted to binge all the movies. So I purchased them. And I never knew that I owned the extended version of this. So that was really great.
Yeah. And there's just so many good tidbits.
Right. So if you can get your hands on the extended version, I think both Erin and I would highly recommend it.
Correct.
This movie came out in 2001, but the book was originally written in 1997. Mm-hmm. And the book rights were purchased in 1999. So they had about 3 years of pre-production. The first movie is very close to the book in terms of script. I think after three, they really divert more from the book.
Totally. And that goes for all aspects of the film. I actually just rewatched Prisoner of Azkaban. And was like, wow, this is a lot different.
I was only surprised at that three-year timeline because I figured with a ready-to-go book, it might have been a little bit quicker.
Actually, no, you bring up a good point. I do think that probably the script did not take them as long as maybe some of the other aspects of the film, because like you said, it's already written. And that was also the first thing I noticed when I rewatched, is that the dialogue in the film is very, very close to the book.
Right. It is very close to the book.
Which was probably really cool for all the people who were paying attention to that when they first saw the movie.
Exactly. And I think J.K. Rowling was more insistent on the closeness. There's an excellent long form interview. It's probably about 45 minutes where Daniel Radcliffe as an adult and J.K. Rowling sit down and interview each other. And they talk a lot about the early years of the movies and how that all got formed. And J.K. Rowling basically said that she was very strict about keeping everything in her world had to be exactly how she envisioned it in her head. And then once they made movie one and movie two, she really trusted Warner Brothers and she stopped coming to set as much, stopped being as involved, and let them take a lot more creative liberties.
Interesting.
I think that's why we see probably a huge diversion, because she was very actively involved, especially in one, definitely in two, and by three, she was much less involved from everything I've read.
Interesting. I have not seen that. If you are willing to see, I'm just referring to her as the author. If you are willing to see the author's face and you're interested in that interview, we will find it and link it in the show notes.
As I said, so this movie came out in 2001. It was pretty much an instant success.
Yeah.
It grossed $978 million at the box office worldwide, and it was the highest grossing film of 2001 and the second highest grossing film of all time. At the time, was a massive success. The book is produced by Warner Brothers Studios. The movie is produced by Warner Brothers Studios. They're going to be the big backing arm behind this, and it's directed by Chris Columbus. Mm-hmm. But something I learned in my research for this episode was that Steven Spielberg was actually at the top of the list to direct these movies.
I did not know that.
He declined because he didn't think it was going to be a good enough project for him. He wasn't sure what the trajectory of the movies were going to be.
Wow. That's very interesting, because with the success of the series, and just thinking about how much money it grossed at the box office, with the success of the book series, there was already a huge built-in audience for the film. I'm not Steven Spielberg, but I don't know what he was thinking. He probably regrets that decision.
That Warner Brothers Studios didn't actually seek out to make a Harry Potter movie. What happened was they wanted to make a movie for children that was going to do well with a younger demographic. They had basically like their assistant level people scouting books to see which one they were going to make. One of the other books that was in line to be made into this movie was, it was about an ogre. Then one of the other production assistants brought Harry Potter and said, this has a good audience, it has a good following, and I think it could make a tremendous movie. And they switched and started making the Sorcerer's Stone movie. I think that's really interesting. It wasn't like they saw the success of the book and were like, oh my God, we have to make this into a movie. It was sort of like, okay, well, we need something to satisfy children. What can we find?
Little did they know that they were going to define a generation.
Exactly, guys. So it's so interesting how these things happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. I'm really glad you brought all that up.
Some of the other things I learned is one of the reasons why it did take 3 years was the casting process was really intense. I don't know if you've read anything about how they cast.
I've briefly skimmed things.
Yeah, so the original casting director was Susan Figgis, who... that name means nothing to me, but they held, J.K. insisted that every actor in the movie be British and mm-hmm. that every location that they shot at be in the UK. She didn't want Warner Brothers to take this to America and make it on a movie lot in Los Angeles. She wanted absolutely everything to be as true to location and accents and everything as possible. It was quite a long process to do all the casting.
Well, the cast is huge.
It's a large cast. And to get the children right was the hardest part. Emma Watson came to the series through her drama teacher, recommending her to audition. Rupert Grint submitted a video audition of him rapping all of the reasons why he should be
right. I remember reading that.
And then the original boy who Chris Columbus wanted to play Harry was later, his name's William Moseley, and he was later cast as Peter.
Narnia.
Yes.
Narnia, he was, yeah.
Peter, he auditioned for the role. That was the number one. And then Chris Columbus saw Daniel Radcliffe in a production of David Copperfield and said, we have to have this kid. And Daniel Radcliffe's parents refused for about a year.
Whoa.
Because they wanted him to be protected. They didn't want him to be a huge child star. He had only been doing small productions at the time. And Susan Figgis, the casting director, quit because they wouldn't finalize a cast because Chris Columbus needed to have Daniel Radcliffe.
Wow. And we're so glad that he did.
Yeah, exactly. So just some interesting... this movie comes out in 2001. In August 2000 is when Alan Rickman and Richard Harris signed on to play Snape and Dumbledore. So the pre-production for this movie was a lot longer than the actual filming and then post-production of the movie, which is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was the 1st of August. Then by the 14th of August, they got Maggie Smith and Robbie Coltrane to commit. And then finally, at the end of August on the 21st, is when they solidified all the children. To think that they weren't even ready with a cast until the 1st of September of 2000. And the movie comes out the next year.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, so that was pretty interesting.
That is interesting. I have done none of that research, and I'm so glad you did. This is another casting rumor that I'm not sure if it's true, that Tom Felton, who played Draco Malfoy, originally auditioned for Harry Potter.
Yes, I have read that, yeah.
And what a difference that would have made.
It's so crazy. I can't see him as anything other than Draco.
I do have to say, just like everybody who was cast in this series, across the entire series, up until Deathly Hallows, there's not a person in the cast that I went, I don't think so, or this is kind of a weak choice. Everybody in the cast just became that character, whatever their character was to me when I was originally watching.
I feel very much the same way. And don't get me wrong, I actually think Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and Emma Watson are pretty terrible actors in the first movie, and they play kids perfectly.
Exactly.
It's not like kids overacting to be something else. They're just three children, and I've always thought that came off very, very nicely.
I had heard somewhere that they eventually had planned on recasting the trio they got older. Okay, so she has confirmed that that is true for me. You can be my fact checker. They had originally planned on recasting the trio, but I mean, I think most of the fandom is so happy that they ended up keeping the original actors, even though I have in my notes here, Daniel Radcliffe breaks character in almost every Sorcerer's Stone.
He does a lot of giggling.
But I'm so glad they kept those actors. However, the flip side of that is they grew up, and Daniel Radcliffe ended up growing up not very tall, but I think it would have been more strange. I, as a fan, can accept that more, being like, okay, this kid who got cast when he was 10 before he went through puberty grew up to look like this, as opposed to suddenly in book 4 it's a different actor.
Right.
Like, I think I would have accepted that less as a fan.
Yeah, me too. Especially because due to a very unfortunate circumstance, Dumbledore's actor switches. And that's always something that's a little sad for me, because I'm particularly fond of the actor who plays Dumbledore in the first two movies, his portrayal of Dumbledore. When we get new Dumbledore, though I love Michael Gambon, it's a totally different vibe. So
Richard Harris was definitely a closer to book Dumbledore.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Michael Gambon brought an interesting element of mystery and this inner anger to Dumbledore, which is, it's a different kind of character, a different way to play him, which is very interesting. But I do really like Richard Harris. So I kind of agree, if they had just abruptly changed the children actors.
Yeah.
That would have been quite bothersome to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of something that they did change in the movies, so as we talked about in our book episode, the original title of this book/movie is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. So the movie is actually called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone everywhere in the world except the United States. If you were to buy a copy of this movie in England or in France or whatever, it would be Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Or a rough translation of that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They thought Americans would have grown up reading Sorcerer's Stone instead of Philosopher's Stone. That would be more akin to what they were familiar with. So they changed. When they made the movie, there's two versions of the movie. There's one in which all the characters will say Philosopher's Stone.
No way.
Where they will all say Sorcerer's Stone.
Are you kidding? I've been wondering that. I'm so glad you found that. I've been wondering that my whole life. Well, I want to see the English version now.
I know. Me too.
Somebody send that to us. If you have this, I'll send it back to you. I'll pay all the shipping. I'll even include a tip. If you own somehow the British versions of any of these movies that differ from the American versions, we want to see them. Please send them to us.
Yeah, I do really want to see them. So I thought that was really interesting. I have so many fun facts, but we'll get to them as we talk. But
cool. I'm so glad you said that. With a lot of talk about, you know, the Harry Potter franchise has never crossed over onto a streaming platform, or at least not yet. That is probably the only media outlet. Like, there's games, there's the movies, there's, you know, that's probably the streaming platforms is probably the only media outlet that Harry Potter has not yet crossed over onto. And there's been some talk, just chatter, that has never been confirmed by Warner Brothers or anybody else, that maybe they're going to look into doing something catering to streaming platforms. A lot of people have been, I've heard two things. A lot of people are calling for a redo of all of the movies, but instead of film, one book will be a season of a series and each chapter will be an episode. I think that'd be fantastic. I think the films have come out too recently for that to happen. Now, and this is going to be a conversation we're going to have when we talk about Prisoner of Azkaban. The other chatter on the internet is going into a series, like a streaming platform series, that has to do with the Marauders era, which I would literally die. The Marauders era is like my niche of the Harry Potter fandom, and I would die. Anyway, all that to say, McKenna and I had this idea. Well, we didn't. We got it from other people who have done it on YouTube already. Of if Harry Potter either never became a film or was getting recasted in 2020, who would you cast as some of the characters? Do you want to do that at the top of our episode, or do you want to do that later and save it for the end?
I would love to talk about our casting. The first character we actually see is Dumbledore. So who would you recast Dumbledore as if you were casting a show?
Okay. I took this casting, I mean, both McKenna and I took this casting thing very, very seriously. We made up our whole list of recasting people and then later found out that other people had done this. And some of our choices ended up lining up with other people's opinions. So my Dumbledore choice is, I'm not the first person to say this, but my choice for Dumbledore would be Geoffrey Rush, who you might remember as Captain Barbossa in the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. I really think Geoffrey Rush would strike a good balance between a Richard Harris Dumbledore and a Michael Gambon Dumbledore. Still quiet and sweet, but also like really weird and quirky. That's my choice for Dumbledore. McKenna.
I like that casting a lot. So my Dumbledore, I chose Charles Dance, who to me is most famous for playing Tywin Lannister in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And I chose him because I think when you look at him outside of the Game of Thrones universe, obviously he plays a very wicked character in Game of Thrones, but he has a twinkle in his eye. He has that sort of grandfatherly Dumbledore vibe. So that's my Dumbledore. We're not going to cast the children because...
Oh yeah, please explain that.
Aaron and I really don't know child actors, and it's complicated because they're going to grow, and so we're only going to stick to adults.
Yeah. Another thing McKenna and I were really trying to go for was to keep the list in the fashion of the original casting with mostly actors from Ireland and the UK. We have a couple who stray from that, but we tried our best to keep that rule.
The next character we meet is McGonagall. Yeah. So McGonagall is played by Dame Maggie Smith movies, and she's incredible. Like, to me, there could be no better.
Genuinely. It's so funny because my entire list is like a smattering of characters from like Game of Thrones, Pirates of the Caribbean, Outlander, like all these other big British blockbusters. I cast my McGonagall as Michelle Farley, Catelyn Stark in Game of Thrones. I purely cast her in this role because I think she has the look of Book McGonagall, the sharp face and the sort of uptight. I think she'd make a fantastic McGonagall.
I chose Emma Thompson.
Okay, it's so hard not to, with all the actors that were involved in the Harry Potter series, it's so hard not to encounter actors that have already been in the Harry Potter series when you're recasting.
Emma Thompson does have a part. We're going to meet her for the first time in Prisoner of Azkaban, the movie, and she plays Professor Trelawney. I think of an Emma Thompson from a Saving Mr. Banks kind of vein. Just like maybe a more stern person.
No, Emma Thompson would probably,
Yeah, so I think she can do both very well. Mm-hmm. So I think she could play sort of a stern McGonagall, but also bring that kind of quirky lightness to McGonagall that mm-hmm. I'm very fond of.
Yeah.
So I really love Emma Thompson. I think she would play a lovely McGonagall.
I agree with you.
Because Robbie Coltrane, he is a wonderful Hagrid.
The person I chose as Hagrid is like a figure in like British comedic theater and film. I chose Stephen Fry, and he's also a big, tall dude, and he plays sweet and quirky very well, and I think he'd make a great Hagrid. Who'd you choose?
So I chose somebody who's not British, Christopher. He plays Tormund in Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
So he's a ginger in real life, but I think I could just darken that up a little bit. And Tormund is sort of, he's not a half giant in Game of Thrones, but he's this like big, large guy who has this sort of harshness to him, but at the same time is very sweet and very loving.
I definitely do not hate that choice. I love that.
Yeah, he has that sort of big guy twinkle in his eye, you know? And he'd be sort of a handsome Hagrid too.
Oh no, we love Hagrid. Anyway, okay, I guess we have to move on to the Dursleys now, huh?
Yes, so another fun movie fact I have is some of the first scenes of the movie are all the letters being poured into number 4 Privet Drive, as you know, the Dursleys are trying to keep Harry from the letters and Harry's trying to get one. One of the things I read is that the owls went through like 4 months of training to be able to learn how to hold letters in their beaks without completely like ripping them up.
Oh my gosh.
So it's not CGI. They trained owls on how to hold it.
That is so extra. Love it. But also like thinking about, if we recall the scene in the Forbidden Forest, like thinking about Ferenz, the centaur. Like, CGI was not in super great shape in 2001, so I don't think CGI owls would have looked amazing. So I am glad that they took the time and effort to do that.
Neat. So, of course, living in the houses where the owls are flying is Vernon and Petunia. So who do you have as your Vernon Dursley?
Okay, so I'm very passionate about my Vernon and Petunia choices. I chose two people. Should we say them together?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, I chose two people that are just icons of British comedy. You're going to hear this a lot from me. My one gripe with the casting for the films is that many of the characters were cast much older than they should have been in the books. I'm going to complain about this ad nauseum when we get to Prisoner of Azkaban and we're talking about the Marauders.
So for context, Lily Potter was probably 21 when she died. And we get some old people.
Yes. And when we see Lily and James in the Mirror of Erised, they look like they're
old,
like maybe mid-30s, maybe early, like maybe James is in his early 40s. Lily and James were 21 when they died. I think they did that on purpose. I think they aged those characters on purpose, which in turn made them have to age a lot of the other characters, because it would have been really disturbing for an audience visually to see that Harry's parents had been killed when they were so young. Like little 10-year-old Harry standing at the Mirror of Erised looking at 21-year-olds. That would have been disturbing in a way. But factual and more heart-wrenching, I think. Anyway, right. You're going to hear me complain about this all the time.
I think in an HBO series, that could be the perfect place to do something like that. Because like a production studio like HBO, they don't really hold back those sort of emotional punches.
Yeah. Or honestly, like Warner Brothers, if they did this, could take it and make their own streaming platform. And oh my God, people would pay for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you know who was originally offered the role of Lily Potter in the Mirror of Erised scene?
No.
So Chris Columbus went on a major campaign to have J.K. Rowling do it, her to be Lily Potter.
No, that would have been
she
weird.
She said that she wasn't an actress, she wasn't going to do enough job, and she was going to ruin her own movie. So she refused, though they begged her to do it.
I'm glad she did. Right. I don't really agree with that choice. Back to Vernon and Petunia. All that to say, Vernon and Petunia are cast also a little bit older in the films than I think they might be as parents of a, 10-year-old, 11-year-old son in real life.
Petunia was maybe like 2 to 3 years older than Lily.
Probably. Now, that I have to make a disclaimer. I think Fiona Shaw is one of the most hilarious people in the whole cast.
Oh, her eye expressions.
I can't.
Throughout this movie. When she's cracking, so this is an extended scene, but when she's cracking the eggs and the letters are coming out of
each egg has a letter in it.
Her facial expression is just epic.
I picked two British comedy icons. My Vernon, I picked Nick Frost, who if you've seen any Simon Pegg movies, he's always Simon Pegg's buddy in these films. And he makes like a hilarious oaf. And I think of Vernon kind of as just this like big oaf. Thank you. I love Shaun of the Dead. And then for Petunia, I picked Catherine Tate, who's a super iconic British comedian.
I chose as my Vernon Dursley, Hugh Bonneville.
Oh my gosh. Downton Abbey is another thing I have on this list of people.
Right. So I have, I have Hugh Bonneville from Notting Hill and Downton Abbey. He plays Robert Crawley. I think he can do a little bit of comedy, but also something sort of serious. But I don't think he would be as oafy as the original Vernon Dursley, as Petunia, who's definitely younger than Hugh Bonneville, but still has that sort of pointy face, that sharp sort of look. I have Saran Jones, who is Dr. Foster in Dr. Foster, which is another fabulous British BBC show.
Awesome.
And I think she's probably in her 40s, but she can pass anywhere from like a 35 to maybe a 45 with movie magic.
Even as an adult rewatching this, just like being swept away and just like the fun and imagination of Diagon Alley, just like being so enraptured by the magic of Diagon Alley and that whole sequence where they're walking through and they see the owls and they see the things in the window doing things themselves. And Harry, like, we're taken along and we're just as shocked and excited as Harry is. I just love that scene. I'm trying to think if I had anything specific.
The one thing I will say about Harry is that he's supposed to have green eyes, as per the book, But in the movie, Daniel Radcliffe's eyes are blue, and they are blue in the movie, and that's because he was allergic
to the contacts. Yeah, they did try, and people complain a lot about that, like him being tall, they complain about that too. They did try to give him contacts, and he like could not do it.
In The Leaky Cauldron, we all meet Professor Quirrell for the first time. What actor have you chosen to replace Quirrell?
Oh yes, I did choose an actor for Quirrell. I'm very excited about my Quirrell choice. The most two-faced, squirrely person that I could come up with was Andrew Scott, who played Moriarty on Sherlock. And I think he would make a hilarious and also really freaky Quirrell. I think he'd be phenomenal.
I'm pretty passionate about my Professor Quirrell. And again, I think it's funny, we both honed in on an actor who can do the two-faced thing very well. Mm. And I've chosen Aiden Gillen from Game of Thrones. He plays Littlefinger.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody can do two-faced, it's Littlefinger. An interesting, sort of like petite, can look very non-threatening, non-assuming, and then just switch it on a dime. So I'm passionate to the ends about my Professor Quirrell.
I will say, as far as the scene when we first meet Quirrell, there is a bit of foreshadowing in the film that we don't get provided with a visual in the book, where Harry sticks out his hand to Professor Quirrell and goes, "Nice to meet you." And Quirrell does not shake his hand. We know from the ending of the movie that when Quirrell touches Harry, he starts getting like Thanos dusted.
Right.
I have to go back really quick and talk about an extended scene that occurs right before Diagon Alley that I should have talked about a second ago, but I forgot. If you have never seen the extended version, I need you to go on YouTube right now and search up the scene of freaking Rubius Hagrid and Harry on the tube in London, like on their way to Diagon Alley to go pick up all his, well, on their way to the Leaky Cauldron. The visual of Robbie Coltrane in the Hagrid suit. It's so amazing. Just go watch it. Find it somewhere and watch it.
Just like muggles watching as they're talking about the cauldron and all the supplies Harry needs. It's so funny.
Yeah, I'm like pretty sure that it's like breaking some code for them to be like, where am I going to find a magic quill? Or, you know, like stuff like that. The scene in Ollivander's when Harry is finding his wand. In the movie, stuff is breaking. I mean, just have to, and it makes it more cinematic, I guess, but in the book that does not occur. And you just have to wonder, like, I think there's so many things that they did take liberties with, probably more later in the series, that just like look more cinematic but aren't related to the book. Because think about it, if Ollivander's like, if let's say, according to my numbers of how many students attend Hogwarts every year, if like 40 kids came in a weekend in Diagon Alley and were looking for a wand and all of his stuff was breaking all the time, that's just a lot of effort with a lot of Reparo spells, you know, like.
Yeah, but it does of course give a great visual effect.
Totally.
The power of the wand, which I think a lot of the things that are twisted in the movie, it's totally just to pack a heavier punch, you know?
Yeah.
How did you feel when the kids get into the boats and
we see Hogwarts for the first time? Well, just you start getting excited when he gets on the Hogwarts Express.
Oh, magic.
And then so magic. All the candy, the chocolate frogs. McKenna knows how I feel about chocolate frogs.
So who did you pick for Molly Weasley now that we're talking about?
I picked Emily Watson. Does a fantastic job of playing actually Jeffrey Rush's wife in the movie The Book Thief. She totally gives me the Molly sort of strict, hard ass, but also really loving and sweet mom.
So the Hogwarts Express is magic. And this is when the trio meets each other for the first time. Their chemistry is adorable.
It's adorable. It's hilarious.
It's so precious.
Emma Watson, sweet little tiny baby Emma Watson. With the bushy hair, was already doing such an amazing job at her Hermione.
Another interesting tidbit is that in the books, Hermione is described to have very large buck teeth, and they made fake teeth to put on Emma Watson.
I did not know that.
And they hated the way it looked visually, and she couldn't speak. She had a horrible lisp when she had them on, so they ended up having to scrap the idea.
Do you know who they did make fake teeth for and keep? Neville Longbottom.
Yeah, you can tell.
Pretty sure in the third through the maybe fifth or sixth movie, he was wearing fake teeth in a fat suit. Anyway.
So
the castle.
So the castle.
Totally. There's a really big change. There are a lot of really big changes from Chamber of Secrets to Prisoner of Azkaban in the films. One of the biggest ones is the layout of the grounds. And it is, so the layout of the grounds does start out a bit differently in Sorcerer's Stone than it ends up being later in the film series.
Hagrid's hut is going to change positions. It is going to be so much farther out eventually. Mm-hmm. The courtyard is a big change that comes in three.
We never see where the big open field that their flying lessons take place in ever again.
There's definitely a lot of different iterations of the castle, mm-hmm. but the general structure remains the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun fact, and I think I actually brought this up in the book, almost everything filmed, almost all of the exterior shots of Hogwarts are filmed on Loch Tay in Scotland. And that includes the castle, the viaduct with the big sort of curvaceous bridge that the train goes over, and all the lake scenes, every sort of like little island scene, like where Dumbledore ends up getting buried. That castle does not exist. It was created with CGI and studio magic, and
looks fabulous.
It looks fabulous. I would die to go to Hogwarts.
Yeah,
I'd
give up everything to go to Hogwarts.
I would give up everything to go to Hogwarts. Are there any other professors you want to talk about now, or do you want to save that for later?
Oh, just my Snape.
All right. You go ahead and start on recasting a Professor Snape.
This is a choice that I have thought so long.
I know what you're going to say too.
To begin on my diatribe, there is no other like Alan Rickman.
Everyone in that cast was so strong. Alan Rickman just shone in that role. He was just perfect.
I've watched every clip interview that I could get my hands on with Alan Rickman mm-hmm. talking about the experience of playing Snape. He was not sold on it when they approached him to do the role, and he had some very private conversations with J.K. Rowling about the character of Snape, and he was the only person outside of J.K. Rowling who knew Snape's fate.
Correct. She had told him in advance. She told him what Snape's story ended up being, even though only by that point book 3 was released.
Right, so she had this idea for Snape that was very long lasting, and he knew all of that. And when you understand that, and then you watch his portrayal of Snape,
particularly the first scene we see him in the Great Hall, when he turns and sees Harry,
that like moment, he's seeing
both the kid who tortured him his entire childhood and the love of his life in one second.
The way he seizes and kind of does that like almost like double take, where his chin is turned and he's looking at Harry. It's genius.
Perfect. And it is genius.
He's sort of underdeveloped. And Alan Rickman, I believe he said, I'll come and do the role, but I want to do it how I want to do it. And it's going to be with like this severe artistic spin to Snape.
The original costume
design for Severus Snape was that he was going to have these long, flowy, bat-like robes. And that was how Snape is kind of always described, as this like bat. He said, Snape has so much emotion bottled up in him. I want his costume to reflect that. So Brilliant. He says he wanted buttons all the way up to his neck, on his wrist cuffs, so that he just looked like he was almost bursting out of the costume. And at any moment, he might just pop a button and this like vicious person just kind of like be released from all of the emotion and anger and frustration he was just bottling up inside of him.
Yeah. And it did it spills over into how he treats the students.
Yeah. Alan Rickman, he just sells it, man. Oh my goodness. He's just so brilliant.
Yeah.
And I love literary book Snape, and I love equally movie Snape. And there is not many other characters in the movie that I feel that strongly about, where I'm like, oh, you couldn't have done anything a little better. I feel that so much to Snape. So that
I think
is
probably
my
Snape and Maggie Smith for me.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. There will be one every episode. And probably. That is today's.
Yeah. So yeah, without further ado, who did you choose?
Listen, if I could choose anybody, it would be Adam Driver.
Oh my God.
To play a young Snape, era Snape.
Oh, like, but...
But...
Okay, no. We should talk about that really quick, because... Again, if we're going to pick the cast according to their ages in their books, Snape at the time of Sorcerer's Stone would be 31 or 32.
Right,
or 30
which I think
or 31.
Adam Driver, 30 to 35.
Yeah, he's certainly the right age. So I just can't look at him without seeing that SNL skit of him being Kylo Ren as undercover boss. I don't think I could make it through the movie.
Adam Driver's a brilliant actor.
You're right. He's a brilliant actor.
In Star Wars, but he's amazing in Patterson, in Marriage Story, in Girls. He has this severity about him that is Severus. Like, he, and he's very popularly discussed as a Severus recast on almost every Reddit thread that discusses this. So he's a popular choice, and he would be my fan favorite because I love Severus Snape, and I love Adam Driver with a fire that burns almost as strongly as my Severus Snape fire. Yeah. But if I have to pick a British actor, and I know I'm really prolonging this, it would be Matthew McFadden from Pride and Prejudice, who plays Mr. Darcy.
Oh God, I love that choice.
He's aged very well. He's in Succession on HBO now.
He's a beautiful man.
Great character. He is so beautiful. And
who would want to transfer Darcy over to Snape? It's perfect.
Right. There's this moment in Pride and Prejudice.
He helps her into the carriage.
Yes.
And he touches her hand, and then you can see him like twitching his hand. I did not think to liken Mr. Darcy to Severus Snape until you said that. But I do love that choice. I support that.
You know,
So you're going to hate mine. And this is one that I picked and then came across on a lot of other discussions about like a fictional fantasy recast. In my opinion, the only British actor who has the chops to come after Alan Rickman in the role of Snape would be Benedict frickin' Cumberbatch.
No.
In my mind, he's the only actor with the chops to play Snape.
No.
I knew you're going to disagree with that. I think he'd make an amazing, totally nuanced, severe Snape. I mean, he has that sort of like weird pointy face that makes him kind of look like an otter and an alien. I don't know. I see it. I also love Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm a huge Benedict Cumberbatch fan, and I think he'd do an amazing job as Snape.
Part of the reason Aaron and I were very keen to start this podcast is that we have very differing opinions about a lot of things in the series, and I'm going to say that this is a big one for me.
But it's also fun because we get to discuss it.
I would literally fight you over this.
I know. You know, and I think Matthew McFadden is a great choice.
Thank you.
But I have to stick with my choice of Benedict Cumberbatch. And listen, Benedict Cumberbatch has been in pretty much, like, he's been in several really big franchises. He was in Star Trek. He was in Sherlock. He was in The Lord of the Rings. He's been in a ton of like really big blockbuster.
Need another one.
Huh?
He doesn't need another one.
I'm just saying he has the chops.
No.
I think look me in the eye and tell me he could not act that role.
I don't like Benedict.
Here's why. No. Okay, we're going to get in a fight now. Gryffindor versus Slytherin. Here we go. Here's why you don't like Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, that is exactly my point. That is the only reason you do not like Benedict Cumberbatch as Snape, because you're Snape and you want to pick somebody you're attracted to.
I don't think he's an impressive actor. I don't think he's as handsome as dumb of girls who obsess over him.
Have you ever seen Sherlock? Look me in the eye and tell me he's not a good actor after seeing Sherlock. Seriously?
I couldn't even make it through the first season of Sherlock. I found it so uninteresting.
Oh my god, you are hurting me so bad.
Yeah, right, hot cake. Bye. No, thank you.
No.
I'm personally offended.
I'm personally offended by you. I'm so mad at you right now. Oh, I love you though.
I'd fight to the death. You can cast Sirius Black and Remus Lupin as whoever you want to cast them as.
Obviously, McKenna's very passionate about her casting for Snape because Snape is her favorite character. When we get to Prisoner of Azkaban, the two people on my list that I am the most passionate about in the entire series as a recast are my choices for Remus Lupin and Sirius Black. You'll have to stick around to find out what those are and continue following along with our reread. But this has been our presidential debate about who could play Severus if we were to recast him.
I mean, Snape is my favorite literary character from any book ever of all time.
Ooh,
so
really?
Yeah, and I think Mr. Darcy is my closest second to that.
Oh.
I love a tortured soul. And
you do love a tortured soul.
I'm an emotional sadist. So it's just anybody but Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch is, I think, one of the best actors of our time.
No.
Watch him do a Shakespeare play and then come back and tell me that you don't think so.
He's in good
role. You just don't think he's attractive. That's the only reason you don't like him. You are letting your view of his attractiveness get in the way of your view of his talent. I think the reason that I find Benedict Cumberbatch attractive is because I think he's so freaking talented as an actor. And I'm attracted to that more than the like otter face.
I'm just not a fan.
You are entitled to your opinion, and I love you. Who do you want to talk about next? You're just hurting my soul.
I do it just to bother you.
I know, and it works.
It does work. I think that's all the characters you can cast for
sure. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yep, what is your favorite scene in this movie?
I can answer that right now. My most favorite scene in the whole movie is the Wizard's Chess trial to get past, that they have to get past in order to get to the stone in the very end of the book. Film. We're talking about the film now. It is my most favorite scene. I think it's brilliant. I think it's cinematically so interesting, super creative, and just like, I don't know, like seeing like a giant chessboard and live pieces, like that is so immersive in the magic of the entire universe.
Who's your favorite character? Like what character would you say sort of won the movie?
Definitely Alan Rickman. Easy.
Yeah.
Easily Alan Rickman.
I think my favorite scene.
Yeah, we were watching, I just have to preface this by saying we were watching this movie, and just like she does in our podcast where we're talking about book chapters, and she goes, this is my favorite chapter for like 15 of the chapters. Every single scene, McKenna. Okay, so what was your real favorite scene, McKenna? Or are you torn between seven?
I have choice words for you that are inappropriate to say.
This is why our podcast is fun.
My actual favorite scene.
I'm listening.
Though there are many good ones to choose from, thank mm-hmm. you very much.
Correct. I agree.
Is probably, I am really torn between two, but I think
I'm okay with you saying two. Go ahead.
My favorite scene is Christmas morning for Harry.
Totally.
Like his first Christmas when he gets presents and he doesn't know that he's going to be getting presents. And then
it's
there's
very
an
sweet.
Extended version of that scene. It's so sweet. And he gets his father's invisibility cloak, which then leads me into my second favorite scene, which would be the Mirror Barristet.
Favorite actor, favorite character in first movie?
Yeah, for me, I think it's cliche, but I think kind of Harry takes it for me this movie.
Daniel Radcliffe literally breaks character in every other scene. Also,
know,
okay, for those listening, if
you,
no, and he's a perfect Harry. He's great.
My last question to you is, what would you see if you looked in the Mirror Barristet?
Oh my God, you can't just pull that on me. You have to like ask me in a text message a day in advance and let me come up with my answer. Is it bad that like a person cannot know their deepest heart's desire? Is that Enneagram 2 of me? I'm like, I want everybody else to be happy before me. Do you know what you would see?
Probably it would just be me and my husband with our family one day and whatever children we happen to have. I think that's probably a deep desire of my heart.
Yeah.
But of course, I have the real one in my heart.
What would I see in the Mirror Barristet? Okay, I've got it. Just like stability in my life. I don't have to be rich. I just want to not have to worry about fine. I don't need a giant house. I just want like a secure roof over my head. Obviously, my sweet, cute boyfriend would be there. I just like, as a singer and a performer, somebody who has like, four jobs, just like some stability would be great. So stick around. Our next episode will be discussing the beginning of The Chamber of Secrets as we move on to book two in our reread. We're going to go through book two. We're going to do some character deep dives, which is something we haven't done quite yet. And then we're going to watch the second movie and so on and so forth. We thank you for your time. Thanks for listening. Hope
Thanks
you
for
found
listening.
Our-
and if you have any questions you want us to discuss or to argue about, which we're always happy to do.
Yeah.
In the name of Harry Potter, please send us some owl posts. We would love to take a dive into your thoughts as well. Hey, thanks for listening to our latest episode. As always, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And if you're not a listener on Apple Podcasts, it would still help us out a lot if you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. If you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything you heard in this episode today, please drop us a line at our Anchor profile. You can leave us a nifty little voice message there, or you can head to our Instagram at The Daily Profcast to DM us or leave us an email. We'll be right back.